Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome to Scary Time, the podcast that helps you find new, emerging, and undiscovered scary and paranormal podcasts. I'm Greg, the host and curator of Scary Time. Today's episode is from Paranormal Connection. The connection between our world and the paranormal is much closer than you might think. Join Joe Foster on Paranormal Connection as he talks about various haunting topics. If you like today's episode, make sure to check out the episode description for links to subscribe. All right, let's get this show started.
Begin.
In today's episode, we have a lady named Eve Howard who's going to tell us her stories of the paranormal. That's right, stories, as in more than one. So we have her telling us about a evil hitchhiker, a strange blue orb, and a portal in her own apartment. Let's get into it.
So this was in, I would have to say it was late summer of 1991, and we were living in Bemidji. I was living in Bemidji. I had picked up my boyfriend and his cousin earlier in the day, and we drove back to Bemidji, and we hung out. We went and saw a movie. We just, you know, we were underage, so we weren't drinking. And I said, well, I had to get him home. I had to get him home by 1 a.m. And so we were driving and I wanted to get there as fast as I could. And when you come out of Bemidji, as you're heading towards Cass Lake, there's two ways to go. There's they call it old Cass Lake Highway. And then there's the highway, which is Highway 2. And you can take that. And I happened to notice there was a woman, and I was probably about 500 feet from the turnoff. So I'm starting to slow down because I'm like hesitating. Should I take the old Cass Lake Highway, which a lot of people will not drive that at night because it is really, really spooky. There's been lots of accidents. People see really strange phenomena on that road. And we weren't too hip about it, but I was slowing down anyway, because I was like, on that road, I can probably go fast. And I can get these guys home before a curfew. Or I can just take the highway and go fast and not have to worry about a ticket. So we were pulling up about 500 feet away from where I either turn or keep going straight. And I noticed a woman standing on the side of the road, like she was hitchhiking, but she didn't have her thumb out. And I just thought it was really strange because she was alone. You know, usually women don't hitchhike alone back, you know, in the 90s. And I didn't think anything of it. And then we had, you know, it was nighttime, so the lights were on, the headlights on the car. Started to approach her, eyes with me through the windshield, and like looked at me and noticed me or knew who was driving. But as soon as she locked eyes with me, she smiled. But it wasn't just the way she smiled, it was like her jaw just kind of dropped, and these teeth, and the teeth were long. They were like long. I think I drew you a sketch, but there's just no way to make it as dead on as it was, because her teeth were probably about this long. And it was like she had many, not just like the normal, you know, 32 or whatever it is that we have, but she had many, and they were long and sharp, and they were on both the top and the bottom. So she had like this Joker smile, like really wide, and just And my boyfriend, I thought, well, maybe I'm just seeing this, you know, maybe I'm tired. And my boyfriend and Dan both started, everybody was just so awake. I remember Dan, do you guys see her teeth? And my boyfriend's like hitting me and he's like, go. And the whole thought of turning to go on the Castle Lake Highway was just out of my head. There was just no way after seeing something like that, you know, of having that follow us in the, on our trip. So I just jammed down the accelerator and the car was, it was a V8. So it was like, boom, I just took off and we passed her. And I remember, my boyfriend's cousin was in the back seat and he was turned around just to make sure that she didn't follow us, because it was definitely the scariest thing that I'd ever seen at that point. I mean, I've had some paranormal things happen to me, but never seeing anything that I just have no explanation for, that just terrified me to the point where I'll never, ever pick up a hitchhiker ever in my life after that. But that was, even they'll talk about it. In fact, I talked to my ex-husband because I showed him the sketch that I'd sent you. And I was like, is this the way you remember her? And he said, yeah, she was wearing like layered clothing, which we thought was really weird because it was still, you know, relatively warm out. I mean, Minnesota's can be cold, but not that cold where you need to wear that many layers. And she was, I'd say she was about 5'8", 5'7". It was hard to tell what her body frame was like because she was wearing like homeless layers. Like she had like a scarf. I mean, she had like a jacket with like lapels, and then underneath she had, you could see that she was wearing, you know, padded up pretty good with clothing. I still have no explanation to that. Even now talking about it after, you know, 30 years, it's scary to think that there are things out there at night. And what about the car behind me or anybody that was coming along that didn't see what she really looked like and stopped and picked her up? And I mean, I think about that every once in a while and be like, did anyone pick her up or was that just meant for us to see? And when I finally got to Cass Lake and we were still really shook up, and I had begged his mom, my boyfriend's mom, to like let me spend the night because I was too scared to drive back by myself. Way too scared. And I had talked to my ex-husband because we eventually got married, but he was like, yeah, he's like that. He goes, you spent the night because you were not driving home and nobody wanted you to drive home after seeing nothing.
Wow. Yeah, that the drawing, yeah, it says a lot. And it was, you know, really detailed. And I'm going to end up putting that, I'll upload it somewhere to where I can link it into the show notes of the podcast and people can press on it and look for it at themselves. So they know what you're referring to. But yeah, I fortunately have not seen anything like that driving at night. I don't want to.
I mean, I've seen some crazy stuff at night, you know, definitely in the sky and on the ground. I don't know if it's just that I'm more open to seeing that kind of thing than, you know, being a paranormal investigator. It took me a long time to get over that fear of seeing these things because you don't have an explanation for it. You want so bad to find the logic and the reasoning behind it. And we weren't drinking. We weren't using drugs that night. Man, we were just kids. We didn't know really where to get anything like that. But even to this day, you know, people will accuse us of, oh, you guys were smoking some, you know, marijuana. And it was like, but to have three people see the exact same thing, because we talked about it on the way home and we like compared notes and what did you see, you know, and the one thing we just seen was her teeth, her mouth. There's just no way humanly possible anybody's jaw could drop and have that many teeth and as sharp as they were, and the light, the headlights were shining off them. And it was scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm sure. Moving along to 2001 with the blue orb.
Okay. Yeah, we were, a former friend of mine and I were going to make a quick trip down to Minneapolis and come back. But, with her schedule, we could only make that at about, I think we left about midnight. And we were driving on some back roads and she was driving. I had no clue where I was, but we were halfway between Bemidji and Minneapolis. And we're like on all these roads. I have no idea how she knew where we were. But she had like a little Mustang, and I was sitting in the passenger seat and she was driving, and we come up and I remember there was like a field on our right. And then we come up to the stop sign and we turn, and I don't know what it was, but something just made me look to my right in the field. And I'd say it was about a third of a mile from the road. And I see that the field there's nothing in the field. It's just grass. I don't know if it was grazing for cattle, but there wasn't any corn or any type of anything growing there. And the trees I can see the trees in the back, but what catches my eye was there was this orb. It was a blue orb, like blue, like beautiful blue. And I'll have to send you a picture of the closest thing that I can think of. But I guess if you go to Spencer's and you see those looks like little orbs, and there's light and electricity inside of it, and you put your hands on it and the electricity kind of touches your hand and lights up. That would be the closest thing that I can think of without, finding an overly edited picture. I'd say it was about close to 4 feet in height. And it was just at the edge of the field, and I could see the trees behind it. So it wasn't like opaque. It was, you were able to kind of see. I could see like the ground was glowing underneath it. So it was probably about maybe 4 to 5 inches off the ground. And it was just in the back, and it was slowly moving, like just strolling along. I mean, it was moving, and it was moving in the opposite direction we were going, because we were driving this way and it was going that way. And I just remember, like, I was speechless. I didn't say anything. And I definitely didn't say anything to my friend who was driving. I didn't want her to ask me, are you okay? Should we turn around? I didn't say nothing. And we're about maybe halfway, about a mile. And she finally looks at me and she said, did you see that? And I just decided, just play dumb. And I said, see what? And she's like, you mean to tell me you didn't see that blue bubble, that blue orb in the field? And I didn't say anything. But I knew that she had seen it as well. And I said, yeah, I saw it. And she's like, what do you think that was? And I was like, no, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, a lot of traditional stories that you don't hear Native Americans elders talk about orbs or fireballs. And the red ones, they always tell us the red ones are bad. And, the blue ones or the white ones, the green ones are not as bad or not bad. So I guess since it was a big blue orb, I'm guessing it was probably capable of harming us, but it didn't do anything. It was just doing its own thing in the field. And we just drove away, and we talked about it for a couple hours before we got down to Minneapolis, and then we never mentioned it again. We never questioned what it was, but you know, it could be anything from just an anomaly to maybe a probe, an alien probe. I mean, those are the kind of reasonings we came up with. And it wasn't storming that night. It was completely, you know, there was no clouds, there was no rain, there was no thunderstorms, there was absolutely nothing that was, you know, going on that night. It was just really peaceful.
You also have down here astral dreams under that as a bullet
point.
Yeah,
and I guess one of the things that I noticed after seeing this orb, I started to have really strange sleep disturbances. My boyfriend at the time was working graveyard, so you know, I would still remain sleeping when he would leave for work. And the first night he left and I was dozing off, and then I was laying on the bed and it felt like someone had come up to me and was like rubbing my temples. And I thought it was him, that he, you know, either didn't have to work or, you know, there was something. So I was just relaxing. It felt, you know, so relaxing. And I'm laying there and all of a sudden it started to get a little bit more harder. And then it started to feel like it was pulling me off the bed. And I couldn't move. I couldn't open my eyes. I couldn't say anything. It was like I had total sleep paralysis. And up to that point, I had never experienced sleep paralysis. I didn't even know what it was. And it scared me. And the dogs were in the room with me and they slept right through it. So I'm just like, okay, it just had to have been a bad dream. So a couple of nights later, it happened again. But this time I was on the bed. I was sleeping on my stomach. And I had that same feeling again, like I can't move. I can't open my eyes. I can't say anything. And I had moved the dogs in with me, you know, so they were practically laying on me. And, you know, they're down by my legs. And I could feel a sensation of someone pushing on my back and on my head and pushing me down into the bed, like with a pillow. So I was like, not only could I not speak or move, but I was like having trouble breathing. And when I finally was able to be have control over my body and get up, and I was just scared. I was really, truly frightened. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what was causing it. So we had a second bedroom that we had fixed up, like a guest room. And I started sleeping in there. And the first night it was fine. The second night, I had that strange, it's almost like this little, it's almost like a pulsing, like almost like a pulsing, vibrating type. I can hear it. It's like very metallic sounding, and it's very, it starts out like very low. Like you probably wouldn't notice it. And I was starting to hear that along with feeling like I was like floating. So then I finally wake up, and if you ever notice, certain ceilings have like that spray, like there's bumps on the ceiling. We had that in our, I had never noticed that before, but I woke up and I was on the ceiling. I was floating on the ceiling and I was pushing against, I could feel the bumps of the ceiling on my hands as I'm pushing away from it. And I'm scared. I'm terrified. You know, this keeps happening to me. What is it? What's going on? Why am I feeling this? Why is this happening? And I woke up and it was morning and I was like, oh, I can't sleep in here either. So I ended up moving out into the living room and started sleeping on the couch. And my boyfriend was still working. So this was probably within a 10-day period that all these occurrences had been happening after seeing the blue orb. And as I'm laying on the couch sleeping. It's all of a sudden, and we had like an L shape, like a kitchen here. And then you went around the corner and then there was the living room. So it was like L shaped. And I'm sleeping at the very top part of the L on the couch. And all of a sudden I see like a mist. I see like a really foggy mist, kind of a darker mist, and it's surrounding me. And I'm walking through the kitchen, but not really walking. It's like I can move. And I come through the kitchen and I turn the corner and I look and I see myself sleeping on the couch. And I was sleeping with my back to the kitchen and I'm sleeping curled up in a little ball, you know, against the couch. And as soon as I saw my body, it was like something just yanked me across the room. Like the mist was like behind me because I was getting yanked, and I just bang, I hit my body and I woke up. And I woke up and I was scared. I'm like, okay, I can't sleep anywhere. So I was shaking. I got up and I got into my car and I drove to my boyfriend's work, and he worked at a grocery store for a night cleaning crew. And I parked out in the back by his car and I slept out there. And he came out at 6 a.m. and he's like, what are you doing here? And I was like, you remember all those things that I'm telling you about where I'm just like, I can't move and all these things, like someone's putting their hands on me. And it's like, I think I'm being attacked. And I felt like I was being attacked. And this went on for many, many years. In fact, I still go through those moments, but my boyfriend, he was from New York. We eventually moved out there in 2003, 2004. He was starting to have the sleep paralysis, and it wasn't happening at night for him because, you know, he worked crazy hours in New York. He had like 2 jobs. This would happen to him during the day, and it would happen while I was in the bed, wide awake. And as soon as he fell asleep, he could just lay down and start snoring. I could hear him kind of trying to make a noise, you know, trying to wake himself up. And I told him, I said, well, you know what, if anything like that happens when you're sleeping, just tell it to leave you alone. And he did. And it attacked him. So whatever that was, I don't know if it was like the same thing that I was experiencing. You know, he didn't want to talk about it, tell me anything other than the fact that he said, well, I did what you said, and that was the wrong thing to do. But he said it was like, we had 2 bedrooms, and he said like the second bedroom, he could feel like there was an old woman in there, and that's what he was dealing with. But we lived in the Hudson Valley in New York. So it was like right outside of the boroughs, and right across the river, the Hudson River. And there was just, you know, it's probably one of the most active places for, UFOs, paranormal in general. Eventually, I'd like to go back out there and do a little bit of my own investigating, but I had no clue what was going on. And I think I eventually watched an episode of Sylvia Brown that just was flipping channels, and it was on, and I was cleaning or doing something, and she was talking about, this woman was telling her that she felt like she was being attacked in her sleep. And Sylvia had told her, well, you're not being attacked, because Sylvia was like a psychic. So she was telling you, you're not being attacked. It's called astral projection. And you should probably, you know, understand what it is and know that you're not being attacked by any type of entity. And it was just kind of like someone had just kind of dropped like all the pieces and boom, boom, boom. That's what it is. So, I think it was, my daughter was very little. She was just a baby. And I was able to like pull out of my body, watch, my husband was sleeping and she was sleeping. And I was up in the corner of the room, and then I just poop, I was outside, and it was like almost right before dawn. And I'm flying over Mille Lacs Lake in Minnesota, and I have eagles me and Eagles were flying, and I looked down at the lake, and it's really shallow there, and there was these walleyes, and we were all, everybody was going in one direction, and I just thought, you know, it's not as scary anymore. And in fact, I've had, you know, quite a few where I can remember when I wake up, just like amazing things, being able to fly, being able to go anywhere I want. Sometimes I see celebrities and go to, it feels like I'm in space. Like I can go anywhere. So it's really cool. So whatever that orb was, I don't know if it was something that just awakened something inside me, but after that point of seeing it, I've had these being able to astral travel in my sleep at night. And people tell me that, you know, you can learn to do it while you're awake. And I've just never been able, even though I meditate usually daily, I'm not able to like get that good yet where I can just leave on a whim and go wherever I want.
Okay. So your most recent one on this list is from 2017, and it's from your apartment. Is this an apartment that you're in now?
Yes. No, okay. In Fargo, Fargo, North Dakota. I'm currently right now, I'm in White Earth, Minnesota, and right on the reservation in White Earth. We had gotten into this apartment, and I was kind of going through an awakening. I was social drink and everything, and I just had stopped doing that. I was starting to become more aware of what's going on around me and why these things were bothering me. And I made friends that were a lot like me, and they're just, you know, think positive, raise your vibrations, and you won't have any issues with things like this. Well, I was, you know, right before that point, we moved into this apartment, and my boyfriend was sleeping in the bedroom, and I got up to go to the bathroom. This is kind of funny. And the medication I took for sleep, because I've always had trouble sleeping when I do fall asleep, and then, you know, I end up leaving my body. So it feels like when I wake up, I don't get enough sleep. I went to sleep. I got up. I went to the bathroom, and I was so tired, I fell asleep. So I'm like, you know, the facilities, and I'm like sleeping like this, and my hair is like hanging. And all of a sudden, it was like my eyes were open, but they weren't. And it was like an image. And now, you know, being someone of higher vibration and opening up my chakras, I'm also a Reiki practitioner. I'm able to see out of what they call the pineal gland, the third eye. So with my eyes closed, I can see things. And I was like sleeping, and all of a sudden this little boy, he had black hair, and it was cut kind of like in, I wouldn't say a bowl cut, but it was the cut kind of longish on the sides and in the back. And he just kind of like leaned out, looked up at me. He leaned down and looked up at me, and he didn't say anything, but I just got this feeling of, are you okay? And I instantly woke up, and I was like, whoa, that was so weird. You know, boy, why is he here? Anyway, needless to say, I went, finished up, and I took off. I went, jumped in bed, and I covered up, and I was like, you know, I had at this point, I've only seen like mist or, you know, anything moving out of the side of my eyes. I've never seen an apparition. Details, his eyes, he had smudges underneath his eyes. He had very deep set eyes, and there was like dark shadows underneath it. He had little chubby cheeks. If you know, if you would have seen him as what he looked like normally, It wouldn't have been frightening at all. He was a very sweet looking boy. He just looked like he was, you know, why are you sleeping? But we had a couple of other instances in that place, and it just kind of led me to believe that there was a portal. So I had a friend of mine that was very sensitive come into the house, and I knew the areas where I felt very uneasy. One was in my daughter's room in the closet, and another one was down the stairs. Like, you walk through the apartment, there was some stairs in the back. You walk down to the basement and there was a laundry room there. And those areas really bothered me a lot. So I did a lot of taking sage and burning it and smudging the house. And I had another, I think the only time I felt really strange was one night. Everyone had gone to bed, my daughter, my boyfriend, and I'm sitting up watching TV. And all of a sudden I just had this feeling like someone had just come from the kitchen, from this area, and was standing in the entryway of the kitchen and was staring at me. And I just got this feeling of anxiety. I was scared. And just a feeling of dread that something was there. And I didn't want to look over to see what was there. I was just going to keep watching TV and not give it my fear, because I didn't want to feed into it. And I just kept watching TV and I didn't even look over there. And eventually that feeling went away, and I never had an issue there after that. And just kept doing the smudging and the saging. And my boyfriend's daughter, she's about the same age as my daughter. She had spent overnight with us, and the two girls were in my daughter's room spending the night. And my daughter had mentioned to me that, I'll just call her Amy. That's not her name, but Amy had gotten up in the middle of the night and was sitting in the closet and was trying to conjure something, was trying to open whatever it was she was trying to open. But she had been in the bathroom, she had been into the closet, and she was trying to open herself up to the spirit world. And in doing so, she had opened a portal in that closet, reopened it, because I know there was one there previously, because I had my sensitive friend and I came in and we cleansed the whole house out and everything was good after that. But as soon as she did that, there was just some really unusual things that were coming through. The astral projections were still there, but they were becoming more intense. There was feelings of, usually I'm never scared, but this time it was almost like a feeling of elation, like I was happy to go, and I thought that was really odd. And then I remember seeing like a kaleidoscope of colors, like white light, silver light, platinum, and it was like a kaleidoscope just kept spinning, and then I was gone. And then I woke up, and I felt like I only woke up like 10 minutes later. And I remember just waking up and it felt like Christmas morning to me. It just was extremely happy. And that was the only time that I remember where I was excited to go. You know, usually it's just like, okay, here we go. If anybody that does these or has this, you kind of get that feeling after a while of, oh, can I just sleep? Can we please hurry up? And there are people that seek to do that. And I don't have it, you know, I have an open mind with it. And anyone who, you know, if that's what they like to do, not like they spend their nights, I have no problem with it. But it's just, I can feel it. I know when it's going to happen. It's like I lay there and it's kind of like how that feels like when you kind of jump when you're almost sleeping, except for it's very minimized, but it's like starts like back here in my head. And I can feel like almost like a humming, like a throbbing humming, a metallic humming. And right before I'm like, I lift out of my body, there's like a pain on this side of my body, like right here. And I've asked people, even this morning, I asked someone, what is that pain and why do I have it? And I've gotten lots of theories, some from, you know, your people that aren't aware, you know, your soul being ripped from your body. Yeah, I don't believe that. Maybe it's more of a subconscious than I'd say my soul leaving my body. Or else maybe, you know, something to do with a chakra, or, you know, they say that you're tethered to your body during these travelings, that you can't ever get lost or not find your way back. I think my medicine man had mentioned to me, he's like, you do that, don't you? And I said, yeah, I do. And he goes, well, make sure that you have your medicine bag in your hand when you leave. So, you know, what he said kind of worried me, because he said, when you leave your body, he didn't say demons. He just said Manidu, which are spirits, you know, dark Manidu that are looking for any type of a host body. And so after he said that, I was like, I always kept my medicine bag with me.
You've also mentioned your boyfriend in astral form as well.
Yes, this was actually this year. I think it was in, when was it? It was either December or January. I have it written down somewhere, but I didn't write it in here like I wanted to. He had been a really heavy drinker and had abstained from alcohol for a majority of 4 years at this point. And I came home from school, and as soon as I opened the door, I could smell the alcohol, and I thought, oh no, you know, he's not like a normal drinker. Like, you know, he's like, we'll take a whole bottle and drink, you know, and it's scary. And I seen that he was kind of passed out on the couch, but he was like, his legs were kind of twisted. And the way he was like, you know, how someone would sit down on like the arm of the chair and then just kind of fall over. So he was like, his bottom was like kind of, you know, propped up against the arm of the couch, and his legs were like twisted, and he was sleeping. And I had a chiropractor's appointment. So I just put my books down, grabbed gas money, and I left. You know, I figured, well, he's not drinking, and there was probably about a fifth of the bottle was gone. And I left, and it was only about there a half hour. And when he would drink, sometimes he would argue with me or get mad at me. So I was coming back through the alleyway of the house, because we parked, the parking lot was in the back, and I'm looking, and I look up in the kitchen window. I see him standing there. I see him. He's wearing a black t-shirt, and he's just kind of gazing off. And the only thing I could think of is he was microwaving something, because we had our microwave right there in the corner, and he's staring at it, just kind of this blank look on his face. And I was like, oh no, I don't want to go back. I don't want to argue. The landlords were plowing the parking lot, and they'd asked me, can you park about a block over? And so I did, but as I was getting out, I seen one of the neighbors, and her and I just started to chat. It was really cold that night. It was probably about 15 below zero, but I still stood outside and talked to her. That's how bad I didn't want to go back in that house. But I didn't really have, you know, anywhere to go. It was dark out. It was winter. So after about 30 minutes of talking to her, it's like, well, I'm going to go inside. They should be done by then. So I walk inside the house, open up the door, walk through, can still smell alcohol. I come around the corner, and he's still laying in that really strange position with his bum up against the arm of the chair and his legs all twisted. And I was, I was confused, because I had just seen him standing in the kitchen 30 minutes ago. And you know, most alcoholics, when they pass out, you know, or anyone who's drinking and blacks out, you know, once, twice, but can you really end up in a position exactly the same as when, you know, exactly the same? And it's just, no, that's not right. So I was checking on him, and I happened to notice that he had he was going to asphyxiate on some vomit. So I called 911, And they came and they were trying to, when I was on the phone with 911, they were trying to get me to pull him off the couch and put him on the floor so that they could do CPR on him. And I was like, no, he's got all kinds of vomit in his mouth. I don't want to pull him flat. Something's telling me no. So when they finally did show up and they got him, and I had asked him when he was released and he came back to the house, what were you thinking? Why were you doing that? And he basically said that he wanted to die, that he was going to drink that whole bottle. And I think that they said his blood alcohol level was 0.50. So he was, if anybody else, a normal person, you or I had drank and our blood level was that high, we would be dead. But because he was an alcoholic and his body and his brain were used to those levels, he survived somehow. But I think I even mentioned to his mom, talked to her on the phone and told her what I had seen that night, that I saw him standing in the kitchen. And I'm not, you know, she was a very spiritual woman, very religious. And she, first thing she said was, do you think he has a dark entity attachment? And I was like, I don't know. You know, when they say spirits in a bottle, I mean, are they being literal? I mean, I know my medicine man tells me when you drink, your spirit leaves your body for 3 to 4 days after you stop. So during that time, you know, people that drink will become depressed, sad, suicidal. And he said that it's because your body misses your spirit, because there's nothing there. That's why when you do ceremonies, that they tell you not to drink before doing, you know, don't drink 4 days, 5 days before ceremony, or doing a sweat and stuff, because they know what they're talking about.
Is there anything else on this list that you would like to talk about that we didn't talk about already?
Yes. Like, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, I think it's right on there. I was 18. It was 1991. And it was my first apartment after I moved out of my parents' house. And I had my son. He was just a toddler. And the story is Dance with the Devil. And what it was I had put him to sleep. He had his own bedroom, and I had a massively big basement apartment. So I just kind of sectioned off my bedroom with some sheets, you know, because he's just a baby. He, you know, just basically did it because I thought it was cool. Probably, I don't know, I was 18. And I put him to bed, and I was watching TV. And it was about 11, maybe midnight, somewhere around there. That seems to be my time, is midnight. And I started kind of feeling like a little anxiety, and I had never felt that before. So I wasn't sure what was up. But as I was sitting there, I started to feel very uncomfortable. And I had like a stained glass window in one of the basement windows, and I just kept looking over at it, and I just kept having this feeling like I was being watched. And as the time got later and later, I was scared to get out of the chair. I was completely terrified. And I don't know, there was no reason for it. There was no noises outside. There was no dogs barking. I lived on the outskirts of Bemidji. So, I mean, you know, it was lived in a neighborhood, and, you know, there were people, houses around relatively close by. So there was no reason for me to be scared, but I just had this overwhelming feeling of evilness. Just, I could almost feel it. It felt very oily. Like the air felt, it was like thick. And it was just feeling like harder to breathe, which was also giving me more anxiety. And I just started pacing the house. I got up and I was pacing it, and I was like, I know, you know, I'll grab my son and I'll leave. I'll get in the car. But I knew that it was outside, and I didn't want to go out there because I was scared. So I was in the bathroom, and I was like, what am I going to do? And I just had this, the terror and the terror. I've never been that scared ever in my life after that point of anything where I felt like there was just evil and it was coming for me. And I could feel it. I could feel the intention. And then I started to like feel, how am I going to get out of this? How am I going to save my son? And all of a sudden this idea popped in my head, and I don't know where it came from because I'm not that kind of person. It told me the only way that you could save him is if you kill him, if you take his life. And it was like, yes, that's what I'll do. And then I was like, wait, stop. What? No. And that even scared me even more, because it's like, where did this thought come from? And why in the heck would I even say, yes, that's the solution? I was beyond fear at that point. And I didn't know what to do. I just knew that I had to stay away from him, stay out of his bedroom. Don't go near him, you know? And I went, picked up the phone, and I called my sister. And to this day, when I call her, she never picks up the phone. Never, never. You always get her voicemail. But that day, she picked up the phone. And this is well before cell phones. And she was home sleeping. And she's very religious. She's a Baptist. And I told her what was going on. And I was like, I'm scared. Like, pray with me. Like, get the Bible, pray. And I'm not a very religious person. I consider myself to be more spiritual. But I knew that I needed something. And she grabbed her Bible and she started praying with me. And I was, you know, she would say, oh, no, let me do the Lord's Prayer and stuff. And this went on for about, I'd say, about 40 minutes. And that feeling, I could feel it. It was like somebody just lifting off of me, that oily darkness was just kind of going away. And I've never felt that again, other than that apartment in Fargo when I felt it when something was looking at me. But I think that I know I you know there's a lot of suicides with on the reservations and with Native Americans, not just only Native Americans, but then you start hearing like these stories when you start going to all these paranormal sites, people talking about, you know, or paranormal shows, and they're like, this young person was like, felt like they were the Satan was coming for them, or, you know, they were seeing demons before they killed themselves. You know, or anything. And you'll start to realize when you notice this, when you start to watch these shows or you start reading, which you're 19 years old. So I don't know. This is just my theory on what had happened, was that as a child, you're not able to sell your soul and you're protected. But when you get to be around 17, 18, 19, you're not considered, you know, a child anymore, you're considered an adult. And therefore, these dark entities, these demons, these devils, or whatever you want to call them, come for us. Not just like specific, you know, I'm not saying one race more than the other, but just young people. And, you know, kind of makes you wonder with all this, and is it really, are they really, mentally disturbed, or is there something else that's, you know, come for them? But I fought mine off. If I had allowed that to happen, I'd probably be sitting in prison because, you know, I laid hands on my child. But I know that a lot of my friends, my ex-husband and his best friend, they have done what they consider to be an exorcism on someone, and removing that dark entity took it into themselves. So, you know, I'm not saying that they're evil or bad people. They just suffer from a lot of addiction. A lot of their friends that felt like this had happened to them are either dead or in prison. And I think I took the opposite way, because I know being a Reiki practitioner, a lot of my healing, I can call upon archangels to come and assist with the healing. And people will feel that. Even if I don't tell them, they will feel that. And that light, that white light. And my Reiki master was doing like an initiation when you first become a practitioner. And I was scared. I didn't know what to, I was kind of scared. So I ended up calling Archangel Michael, for he uses for protection. I also use him during any type of paranormal investigation. So for protection, you know, before an investigation, you protect yourself. Afterwards, you protect yourself so that nothing follows you home. And is there a reason why I can converse, you know, and use angels and what other people can take dark entities out and put them in themselves? And what is that? You know, it's not something to think about. I know I think about it quite often. Very grateful for that my sister answered her phone that night, and that my son is going to be 32 this year. So, 31. I'm making him older than you.
So you've mentioned it a few times already that you do investigations or whatnot. So, right. Why not go into that next? Like, what's all that entail? How'd you get into that? You mentioned, well, to me personally, that you have got a new team going.
Yes.
We can talk about that if you want.
Sure. The previous team that I was on, we were all female, all Native American. And my second group. We had a previous group of four of all females. This group, it's me and another gentleman, my partner Tim, is very an empath. He has a lot of sensitive. I'm also an empath. I have claircognizant, clairaudient, and just extra sensories being. I just feel that this was my calling, just because my whole life I've always dealt with the paranormal. I think I sent you a list, and there was a total of 8 houses that I've lived in that have been haunted. And I was mentioning that to my stepmother, and she said, "Baby, did you ever think that maybe it's you?" And it was like mind blowing. Is it? You know, and being an empath, you know, you have like this light, and that's like a beacon for any type of paranormal entity, good and bad. And I've learned as I've gotten older, and I've become more in tune with spirit worlds and also my own spirituality. You know, the best thing you can do is just raise your vibration. Don't allow, you know, don't do bad. I'm not saying, you know, I'm definitely not religious, but, you know, just do unto others. That makes total sense to me.
But, yeah, interject here for a little bit.
Sure.
I've done a few of these already. And listening to the people's stories, I've come to the conclusion that there's two types of hauntings. There's haunted places, and then there's haunted people. Uh-huh. And there's another lady that I talked with who she also, because of what she went through, she also got into Reiki, and it was the first time I've ever heard of it. So I had to ask her, I was like, what's this? You know, I've never heard of it before. So she had to explain to me what that was. But
well, I've always been a healer of some sort, and, you know, I'd see my medicine man and I would tell him, you know, I think that I can heal people. Then he asked me a bunch of questions like, well, how does pain feel to you? Well, I feel it like a heat. And then I can close my eyes and put my hands over a certain part of someone's body. And it's just like these like lights go off, even with my eyes shut. It's like warning. So then I will stop there, you know, and I had no idea what I was doing. And when I wanted to go back to him to learn more, he had passed away. So the one thing that I did was I contacted a Reiki master in Fargo, and I took her classes for level one and level two. And it just made sense to me. You know, I'd always helped people. I always helped them, you know, with aches and pains, you know, my kids. And I'd say, aside from getting sick once, I've been healthy for like the last 5 years. And people around me too will stay healthy and just, I don't know what it is. It's blessed, I guess. But I'm not a healer. I'm just a channel for the healing energies. And that's one of the things they teach you, you know. Don't put your ego into it. You know, they crash you. Your ego's gone. It's not you. So, you know, personally, I'm not a healer. I'm just a very good channeler, I guess would be what. But the one thing that you were talking about, our new paranormal group, we haven't come up with our name just yet because your previous group was involved sisters, and Tim and I are not brother or sister. You know, he's married, and his wife is the opposite of him. So I was hoping that I could find somebody. I've been looking for someone that can see spirits. I can only sense them. I can sense energy. And I get feelings like when I go into a place, I know. I can even be outside of a house. You know, if I'm just visiting someone and it's like, you have a spirit in your house. And most of the time they're like, how did you know? You know, can you do anything? Well, that's the one thing that Tim and I agree on, is not only do we go and investigate, we're not there to prove the existence of spirits because we know they're there. But majority of the time we go there, so we want to like send these individuals into the light and send them on their journey, because nobody wants to get stuck in the same place for eternity. And I know that Tim and I had talked about wanting to get into some of these residential schools around here. And they find bodies of thousands of children that just never made it like back home to their families and disappeared. And, you know, there's just a big mass grave in the woods somewhere. And we want to be able to get in there and do some ceremonies and get them on their journey so that they're not trapped here, so they can be reunited with their families. Because my parents grew up in boarding schools, and, you know, hearing both of their stories and just thinking that if, you know, anybody that I know that went to a boarding school and never came home, you know, like to be reunited with them somewhere down the path. So that's what we're trying to do. I've contacted some of these schools, and because of how emotional it is, most of them won't return my calls. I've even gone as far as emailing Deb, was it Hagland? She's the deputy or interior secretary. She's Native American. I've emailed her in Washington asking, you know, is there any way that you would allow us to go in and to be able to have these children be sent off to the light so that they can reunite with their families. I haven't heard anything, but it was a shot. It was a shot in the dark. But I think it is MEA weekend, which is October 21st, 22nd, 23rd. Tim and I are waiting for verification that we can get into the No Pemming Sanitarium. It's by Duluth. I think it was on the Travel Channel Destination Fear, one of the episodes there. And we're going to bring some people that are not definitely in the paranormal investigation, but wanted to come and check it out. So we're still looking for a third person for our group. We just would like someone who can see spirits and, you know, that's way better than an EMF detector. and help out, you know, we do house cleansings too for anybody that has an issue. I've had people contact me regarding entity attachments and being able to, as a Reiki, practitioner, you can remove these attachments. So, you know, it's definitely way easier than going to the Catholic Church and getting a priest to come to your house. And, you know, most of the time you hear these horror stories of, you know, the person not making it because it's violent. But with Reiki, it's very simplistic and it's beautiful. So it's something we'd like to work and do together.
All right. So before I wrap this up, there's one thing that I ask everybody so far. Sure. So the reason, one of the reasons why I'm doing this is for other people to educate themselves on the subject and have a place that they can go and get advice kind of thing. So if you knew anybody who was in a similar situation but they didn't know what to do, what advice would you give them?
Just clarify, what attachment, haunted house?
So any of your experiences that you've had, if someone else was having a similar situation, what advice would you give them since you've already experienced it?
Well, if I'm close enough and I can make the drive, I'm definitely going there and helping them, because I remember what it was like when I was younger and I was, you know, experiencing all these paranormal phenomena, and I just scared out of my wits to even like get off my bed, you know, or walk down the hallway in the dark, or, you know, be home alone. I know what it's like. It's terrifying, and you feel alone, so alone. And who are you going to call, you know, to come and help you? You know, there's usually not anyone, but usually with some people that I can't do, I'll do like Zoom, have them walk through the house with them, you know, because of the pandemic, you know, you can't really, you know, social distancing. So I would say the best sort of people to call would be people that are either in paranormal investigations, but, you know, you see a lot of them, they go in and they just, yep, it's haunted, and they leave. You know, what are these poor people going to do? You know, just try my best, you know, and to be able to alleviate that fear and the terror of being scared and feeling like a prisoner in your own house. And Tim and I just have the same mindset that we want to help people. We want not only the living, but also the spirits that are stuck here. We want everyone to rise to where they're supposed to be and not have to live in fear.
I want to give a very special thanks to Eve Howard for telling us her stories on today's episode. And if you would like to get in touch with Eve, then a link to her Facebook profile will be in the description below. And I would also like to thank you, the listeners, for joining me on today's episode. And to let you know that the show is supported by listeners such as yourself. Without you, it would not be possible.
Thanks again for listening to Scary Time by Indie Drop-In Network. If you would like to nominate a scary or paranormal podcast to be featured, just send me a tweet at @IndieDropIn. I'd also love to hear if one of our featured podcasts is now your favorite show. Indie Drop-In survives off ad revenue and listener donations. If you would like to contribute, please consider buying me a coffee. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/indiedropin. If you look at the very bottom of the episode description, you will see a link to make it easy. Indie Drop-In also has many other shows you might like. Just go to indiedropin.com. See you next week.